Welcome to the Workforce Navigator podcast. I'm Steve McDonald, your host. And today we've got, I guarantee, a very interesting conversation today with John Jeff Hutter. Now, John, you are the Director of Talent Acquisition at Two Chairs. You have one master's. You're going after a second master's right now. And you said it was in happiness studies. I'd love you to tell us a little bit about that. You're in the process of writing a book about grief. And then there's a lot that translates into the learnings from that book and what you're writing there into the workforce. But everything is going to coalesce around today's topic of missed opportunities at the intersection of empathy and accountability in the workplace. But before we jump into that, maybe if you could explain a little bit more about your background and what you're doing right now.
Yeah, I would say that at the core of my experience in work is my experience in life. And it would be remiss of me not to mention losing my dad while I was working abroad in Seoul, Korea in 2016, absolutely changed the trajectory of not just my life, but my career, what my purpose is and the things that I'm passionate about. And before that experience, I think I was someone who was chasing career advancement in the form of like shiny object syndrome. Like, what is the most exciting project I can take on? What's the biggest, best title I can have? And while it wasn't instantaneous, losing my dad the way that I did while I was living and working abroad really made me question a lot of the things that I valued in life and what my purpose was. Because I did lose him to suicide, I became very passionate about mental health, which is appropriate given that I'm now leading talent acquisition at a mental health provider. And it is so central to who I am. And I think that journey also led me down a really intensive, what I would call like spiritual download for 8 years, the last 8 years since I lost him. And so many of the things that I worked on were internal and have now made me so passionate. And I also think capable and qualified to work with other people and help them get to know themselves better so that we can be better leaders.
So what I want to do is I want to get your point of view right away here on the importance of emotional and social intelligence in creating leaders inside of our organizations. I think that'd be a great place to start.
Yeah. I think that emotional and social intelligence are qualities that I think group them under soft skills. And having worked in recruiting, I know a thing or two about what hiring managers are looking for. And many times you will engage with a hiring manager and they're looking for a very specific type of work experience, or they are looking for some type of technical skill. And while there are, of course, leaders, while they're thinking about those soft skills, I would say the vast majority, it's secondary or tertiary to the recruiting process. And the importance of emotional and social intelligence in the workplace is that we are working with people. We are working with other humans who have their own distinct emotions, lived experiences, goals, and intentions and motivations. And no matter how capable, qualified, technically skilled we are, it is so important to be able to recognize the humanness in each of us and the diversity of experience that we have. And so keeping that in mind, I think it demonstrates that emotional and social intelligence in the workplace and as leaders, being able to demonstrate that is the difference between having a wildly successful company that is able to retain folks, keep them there, help them grow in their careers, and companies who have staffed a lot of really smart people, but are not invested in the mission. They're not as invested in each other as humans and helping them achieve their goals. There's probably more I could say about that, but I'm sure it will come up in questions later on.
Here's the first observation. This idea of soft skill, it's implied that it means it's not as important. But I'm going to tell you from past guests, I've talked to a CEO that's talked about creating high-performance leadership teams. And he said, Steve, one of the most important things is that they know that I have their back, that I understand the difficulties it might be in some of the things that are going on in their lives, relationships within the leadership team, within their own teams, But he said, the most important thing is they know that they have my support. That is an emotional intelligence that he had that I would say goes far beyond a soft skill. And it translates not only him to his leadership team, but them to their teams, peer to peer. We had another guest on that talked about recognition of cultural diversity, and especially where most of our companies that we work in, we have a very global component. We have clients, or we have coworkers, or we have partners in other parts of the world that come from different cultures. Understanding those cultures and appreciating that and bringing that into the mix of how we work together in an organization, I wouldn't call any of these that we're talking about here soft skills. I'd say that they were like very strong leadership skills that were front and center, along with the skills to actually require to do the job. So I just wanted to put that on the table, as I think what you're talking about here is so important. I wanted to underscore that. And I know that you wanted to talk about culture as well and navigating workplace cultural movements and things that are happening. Maybe this is a good point to do that.
Yeah, I think that first, in order to talk about understanding culture and the macro, we have to make it really clear that emotional intelligence starts with you. In order for you to understand other people's feelings and motivations, you have to be able to develop within yourself the ability to understand your emotions, to express them, to navigate the complexities and the nuance of that. And I won't give a litany of examples of how one can go about that. I think that's probably another topic, but I would say it's incredibly important. And I don't know that if we value that internal journey culturally in the workplace or otherwise right now. And it's just important to remember that it starts with you, because once you can relate to yourself emotionally, you will be able to deepen your pattern recognition abilities and be able to understand what's going on in the room. And I think that is so important as we begin to talk about the broader macro cultural movements in the world. And I think that's where also social intelligence comes in, because something I wrote down while you were talking is that social intelligence also allows you to leverage emotional intelligence and in an appropriate fashion in the workplace. Because one example I can think of is, if we are demonstrating empathy and seeking to understand what someone's experience is in the workplace, we also have to recognize that sometimes some people don't want to talk about certain things in the workplace. And that's where empathy can go awry, because in our personal lives, we may want to prod and poke and seek to understand because we care about the other person. But with social intelligence, we also have to understand when that's socially appropriate. And in the workplace, you have to understand sometimes that there are boundaries that people will set. And the social intelligence is where you can acknowledge that and say, okay, I've sought to understand and I'm detecting there's a boundary here. And I could probably go a little bit further, but I'm going to choose not to, because my social intelligence is telling me, hey, this probably isn't a good idea. And going back to your initial question about navigating workplace cultural movements, is everything I just mentioned is imperative when we begin to think about various workplace cultural movements. And I think that my own personal experience with this was during the early days of the pandemic, when I think culturally, we were all quite alarmed. Our nervous systems were activated. We didn't know what was going on. And then we also were coming off the heels of and the beginning of other social movements. And so I can think of Me Too, Black Lives Matter, conversations about the LGBTQIA plus community in the workplace. And all of this started to trickle out into social media. And I think that the line between the corporate world or the work world began to become a conversation that was much more embedded within the cultural zeitgeist. And I can think specifically of the Great Resignation that became a trend on social media. And I think for the purpose of this conversation around empathy and accountability for leaders, it is about understanding what is going on socially and culturally so that leaders can maintain a sense of understanding of how different people are feeling about different things And when I think specifically about the Great Resignation, and I think the reckoning that we had in the workplace about the role that work plays in our lives, what type of meaning we put into work, we began to talk about psychological safety. And I think that is particularly relevant in the conversation about empathy and accountability, because while I think that the conversation about psychological safety was greatly overdue, I think that because it is something that now is being talked about broadly within society, we've lost an understanding of what that actually means. And that's actually something we can probably go into a little bit more.
This idea of empathy and accountability in the same sentence, empathy all about a greater level of understanding, appreciation for what somebody's going through, but the need to keep them accountable too. How do you balance those two? Because sometimes accountability, you've got to really hold people feet to the fire. There's business, there's deadlines, there's clients that we're servicing.
Yeah, and I think that what's helpful here is the way I think of empathy is I think of empathy as understanding. So if empathy is awareness and understanding, that awareness and understanding does not need to translate to action every time. And so I think of my role as a leader as seeking to understand the motivations behind certain decisions and then shedding light on how those motivations and decisions impacted someone's work. And so I can think of an experience working with a direct report who was working on a very important cross-functional project. As this person and I were working on this project, I presented several ideas that I later learned were completely wrong. I was working off of incorrect information. I was not the subject matter expert. And as well-intentioned as it was, as a leader, I went in forgetting that despite my own opinions about hierarchy and really just wanting to be in it with people, I was this person's manager. I was this person's boss. I was someone who does their performance reviews. And no matter how close of a relationship and how trusting of a relationship me and this person was, I did not remember that what I was saying could be interpreted or land as a directive. And so when we were working on this project, I said, hey, I think we should do this. Maybe we should try that. This individual took that as direction, went and executed, came back, and I was like, hey, this is like, why would we do this? This doesn't make sense. This isn't illogical. And I remember the person looked at me and said, I did that because that's what you told me to do. And so one, I felt like an idiot in that moment because I was like, oh, why would I say that? That makes no sense. And so I began to seek to understand, okay, why is it that this person didn't push back? I thought that we had a very close relationship. This person has given me feedback before. What is the difference here? And as I paused and reflected on my role in that interaction and then asked questions of this person about why they didn't push back, what it is that prevented them from stopping and saying, hey, John Jeff, I actually think that's a bad idea. I realized that this person had been through several interactions in previous workplaces where that type of behavior was not acceptable. You did not push back onto a boss. You didn't tell a manager that they had incorrect information. And in that moment, I realized that this person's lack of or inability to raise their hand and say, hey, this is incorrect, was rooted in their lived experience. That's the empathy piece. At the same time, I had to say, okay, I understand that. And what I need you to do is to be able to raise your hand and say, hey, why are you telling me to do something that's wrong? Do you realize that this is incorrect information? The empathy component is understanding the reason why this person is operating this way. The accountability piece comes in saying, okay, I still expect you to be able to tell me when something is wrong. The component, which is the intersection between empathy and accountability, is understanding what is it that I can do as a leader for you to help become more comfortable with that, given those experiences, knowing that this is something that is a core component of your job. There are people who have a lot of opinions in areas where you are the expert, and it's going to be important for you to be able to raise your hand and say, this is incorrect. We cannot do this. And so it's not effective if I were to say, oh, okay, because of these experiences you've had in the past, you don't have to raise your hand and voice dissent. So I hope that is a helpful anecdote to understand where empathy, accountability, and this like responsibility in between, which is where the leader comes into play.
And is that a role of the leader to, knowing that you've got different team members that have different backgrounds and different organizations, to set the tone up front, like to say, I want feedback, I want everyone's opinion, I want collaboration on this idea. Is that incumbent upon us as leaders to do that? Or how does that just naturally happen?
It is incumbent upon us. And I think it naturally happens when we set the expectation for that, but then follow up the expectation with a demonstration of those behaviors. I can think of any time that I'm onboarding someone new to my team, in the first one-on-one I have with them, one, I seek to get to know them and really develop a rapport and to understand to the extent that they're willing who they are as a person. And the second question that I've started asking recently, is there anything in your past work experience that has been really negative or triggering or has affected your perspective on the workplace? Because I want to understand what's contributed to that so that I can identify ways that perhaps I can demonstrate understanding. And so I think of a few folks who I've onboarded who have said, hey, one thing that's really triggering for me is setting a 15-minute meeting without any type of context. And most of them felt that way because that is how they were laid off. That's how they found out that they didn't have a job. There's a whole other conversation, Steve, that we could have about better ways to notify folks that their jobs have been impacted by reductions in force, because I think the 15-minute meeting on the calendar is a tell. And what I will say is now I ensure that if I want to chat with someone, if I do want to pick their brain for 15 minutes, I give them a heads up and say, hey, I'm going to put 15 minutes on your calendar. I want to talk through this project, this thing, and I just want to check in and see how you are. And so I think that's like a second responsibility that is incumbent upon the leader, which is walking the walk. So it's one thing to say, I want to create a space that is open, honest, where you can give me feedback. But then the second part of it is demonstrating that behavior. And one thing that I have really endeavored to create in the teams that I work with is modeling receiving feedback. So I will ask for feedback. Sometimes I may even ask a manager to challenge me in a meeting on a particular thing where we disagree, instead of hiding it in the background and then having the meeting after the meeting, because I want to demonstrate that not only do I want feedback, but I can take it and I can handle it. And I'm also a human, and that the response to feedback need not be a clinical experience devoid of human emotion. It is not fun to be told you're not doing something well, or that you showed up as a jerk in a meeting. Those are not fun things to be told. And I think the more that I can hear those things and have the human experience on a public forum and say, I don't like hearing that, but I get it. So let me think about how I'm going to work on it. I think that those are really important elements to creating what is truly a psychologically safe space, which is really important.
All of this has to translate in some way into your recruitment activities. And these are all really important things, but how do you decipher from somebody who is a candidate that is going to have these qualities of emotional intelligence and social intelligence and empathy along with accountability? And how do you ascertain that? Or is that something that's part of the culture that's built in that they're going to learn? Is it a combination? How do you think about that?
I think to assess someone's relationship with empathy and accountability, so a candidate's relationship with those things, I think the most important thing off the bat is to be open and transparent in the recruitment process about what working at this company is like. And so I think in recruiting, sometimes we get caught up in selling or emphasizing the positive components of the workplace. And what I have really endeavored to create is a recruitment experience where we can say, hey, these are all of the really great things that are going on. Let's also talk about some of the not so savory things. Let's talk about the really difficult days. And I think that starting with that, I think it is the first step towards building trust with a candidate so that they can see that this is a multifaceted organization with good days, bad days, challenging projects, exciting projects, and everything in between. I think establishing that level of transparency and trust then opens up to asking questions, behavioral questions about someone's experience with empathy or accountability in previous roles. And I think there's a few different ways to do this. I think that the tried and true standard is behavioral interview questions where you are asking about a time someone had to performance manage someone who wasn't meeting expectations. There's a lot more to an answer for that question in what's not being said as there is what is being said. Because if they give an answer about how they put the person on a performance plan and they weren't successful and the impact it had to the organization that there was someone who wasn't performing and there's no mention of the candidate's understanding of the individual's experience, I think that's an indication of, okay, you may be able to hold someone accountable, but you're also not demonstrating any understanding of what this person is going through. And then similarly, if there's an answer about this person had this thing going on in their personal life and there were all of these reasons why they couldn't be successful, but there's no connection to the reality of then needing to hold that person accountable to the expectations of their role, then it's probably over-indexing on empathy at the expense of being transparent with this person about what is expected and making excuses and not holding them to the greatest extent of their potential.
So what I want to ask in all of this that we've been talking about, if you had to boil it down and say, here's the one most important thing that I want you to take away from this whole conversation and how you can act on it, what would that be?
Do the work on yourself. As a leader, seek to understand your own emotional world, your own inner state, because getting to know yourself really well will allow you to get to know others really well. So it has to start with you. You have to do the work. You have to go inward. You have to understand, why is it that when this person says this one thing, I get really angry? That's something for you to explore. Why is it that I am really frustrated with this type of project? And again, we're talking about the workplace. So I think starting with the workplace is a great place to do it. So the bottom line, it starts with getting to know yourself. Getting to know yourself allows you to get to know other people well. That then enables empathy. And I think the second point that I would offer is think of empathy as understanding and awareness without the compulsion for action. So empathy is seeking to understand the experience of someone else, putting yourself into their shoes so that you can begin to imagine what it is they're going through. And then I think the third thing I would offer and the final thing is that accountability is not just the accountability to the expectations of the role. I think that the unfortunate reality of the world we live in is that empathy and accountability have been pitted against each other at opposite ends of the spectrum. And I think that holding someone accountable is the greatest form of care that we can show someone else, because holding someone accountable is believing in their potential and not allowing them to make excuses that rob them of achieving that potential and making it a reality. And with accountability, use empathy not as an excuse, but as an understanding so that you can adjust your approach. You can consider the way that you communicate something. You can consider the time that you communicate something. Because ultimately, if you are tailoring your approach to holding someone accountable to the person, it's probably going to be a lot more successful because you've individualized it to their needs. Again, with the agreement that we're not equating their needs with making excuses.
I love that. And to me, the empathy piece is that I'm going to work with you. Somebody might have been sick for a little bit of time. We have these deadlines. Are there things that can slide? Are there things that can accommodate the fact that you were after a little bit. Or to me, empathy is like, I'm understanding and I'm working with you. We're both in this together. Let's figure it out. Is that a bad way to look at that? Or is that a component of it?
I think it's a good way to think of it, with the caveat, again, that there's a guardrail with empathy that we have to remember, which is letting someone off of the hook. Because letting someone off of the hook is a form of enablement. And enablement, in the context I'm referring to it, is creating the conditions for someone to perform or operate in a way that is below their potential. And so I think that absolutely make adjustments. If someone has an obligation outside of work that they've communicated, that's totally appropriate. It's also about understanding what are exceptions and what are habits. Because if it's a habit, it's a different conversation. You said something just now about empathy being in it with people and being in it together. And I think that it doesn't stop just there, being in it with them. It is using your understanding of their experiences to not just inform how you operate with them or the perspective you have with them, but to develop pattern recognition over time. I think the more that you get in with people and understand their experiences, the better you begin to identify certain behaviors across time and space that you can recall and say, hey, wait, hold on. I talked to this person 5 years ago when this particular thing came up, and what I learned was this. Is it possible that a similar thing is going on now? And it's important to seek to understand, because sometimes you're totally wrong. But at the very least, it offers clues as to why someone may be showing up to work late, or not turning in assignments on time, or not speaking up during a project meeting. And it allows you to skip some steps here and say, okay, I think this is what may be going on. Let me seek to understand if this is actually the case.
I love it. I wish we had more time, but because I know there's going to be more questions that people have. And would it be appropriate that we gave out a link to your LinkedIn profile so people could reach out if they had questions?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on. And one of my biggest takeaways, the soft skills are some of the most important skills that we need to have in an organization, within our leaders, within our teams. And so that's a huge takeaway that I have from today. And I just appreciate you coming on and sharing all of your insights.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.